Fleischman G. Sauer, presenting a variety entertainment directed by Rudy Valley.
Valley. The late Noah Webster, noted definer, defines variety as follows: diversity, variation, change, an intermixture or succession of different things. Our variety program this evening is strictly according to that definition. We offer the following succession of things, very different, and we hope, very entertaining. A scene from Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, adapted for radio from the original play script first performed in 1895. By arrangement with Sam Harris, we shall introduce Mr. Conway Terrell in the title role, supported by Harold Vermillier and Miss Rose Hobart, who appeared in the recent movie version of the play. A musical sequence taken from Offenbach's grand opera, The Tales of Hoffmann, with a mixed chorus and with solos by Miss Lois Bennett, Miss Cecile Sherman, and yours truly. An interview with Louis McHenry Howe, confidential secretary to President-elect Franklin Delano Roosevelt, conducted by Walter Trumbull, noted newspaper correspondent. A suitable intermixture of pure comedy, provided by Lou Holtz and Company, and a great deal of assorted music by the Connecticut Yankees.
I heard you singing, your lilting song came floating through the air. In harmony, the twilight bells were ringing, and all the world was young and fair. I love you, I love you, I love you. Across the daisy fields, I heard you singing. I love you, I love you, I love you. And all the world was young and fair. But daisies long have lost their magic seeming, and o'er the fields the wild winds sigh and mourn, while far away you sleep in peaceful dreaming. And on my weary way I go alone. But still I hear the bells of twilight ringing, and I can see the love light in your eyes. As o'er the daisy fields I hear you singing your song divine from paradise. I love you, I love you, I love you. Across the long, long years I'll hear you singing. I love you, I love you, I love you. Your song divine from paradise.
Lou Holtz, comedy star in Manhattan Mary, You Said It, holder of the world's long-distance record for return engagements at the Palace Theater while the Palace was still the Palace. Believing that the Holtz personality and the Holtz dialect have been too long withheld from the air audience, I persuaded Lou to leave off basking in Miami long enough to meet the finest audience I know. Ladies and gentlemen, meet Mr. Lou Holtz.
Hi-ho, everybody. I have a brand new song for you entitled, She Used to Go with the Landlord, Now She Goes with the Lease. The landlord dispossessed Mr. and Mrs. Jones. They stood on the sidewalk in tears. She said, I'm grateful to the landlord because this is the first time we've been out together in years. Oh, soul of me, lost elephant, lapium de becha. Mr. Cohn said to his son, A.B., come jump in my arms. He pulled his arms away and let the kid fall. He said, you see, that's your first lesson in business. Never trust anybody at all. Oh, soul are me. Oh, soul are you. Lost that affair. Oh, look, I have a story. Here's a little story that I haven't told in years. It has to do with a man by the name of Levy. Levy came to New York to attend the wedding of his brother, opened up his trunk, found that his wife had neglected to put the trousers of his evening clothes in the trunk. So he goes to his brother 5 hours before the wedding, and he says, Sam, he says, what happens to me shouldn't happen to that dog. He said, I opened up the trunk. He says, the coat is, the west is, but the pants ain't. His brother had made $45,000 in the fur business. He said, you keep cool and pipe down. He said, you go over to Goldberg on 8th Avenue. Over to Goldberg. He's got any kind of frown. He's got any kind of frown, he said. But whatever he'll ask you for the pants, he said, you offer him half. So his brother says, you mean to say anything he'll ask me for the pants, I shall offer him half? His brother says, you said it, my friend.
Lou Holtz has asked me to thank our studio audience for their generous reception. We have arranged for him to return to this microphone later in this program for an encore. So wait for it. That you'll grow old, baby, but you're so lovely to behold, baby, you mustn't lose that form, those cheeks so nice and warm, you mustn't lose that certain thing that took my heart by storm. You've got the skin I love to touch, baby. I hope time doesn't hurt it much, baby. I wish that you could stay just as you are today. I hate to think that you'll grow old. A new show opens on Broadway next Monday night. Originally called Forward March, it has been marking time for the last 6 months, while its authors Ray Henderson and Lou Brown have revamped and revised the entire show. With such stellar names in the cast as Jimmy Schnozzle Durante and Lupe Velez, it bids fair to be a smash hit. It is a foregone conclusion that the tunes will be outstanding when we consider who wrote them. Having written tunes for Scandals, Potchon, Hold Everything, Lou Brown and Ray Henderson always have great tunes. This is one of their best, one they thought of putting in Scandals at one time. I hate to see you growing old, baby. That you'll grow old, baby. You're so lovely to behold,
form, those cheeks so nice and warm. You mustn't lose that certain thing that took my heart by storm. You've got the skin I love to touch, baby. I hope time doesn't hurt it much, baby. I wish that you could stay just as you are today. I hate to think that you'll grow old.
We present now Mr. Conway Turle, distinguished stage and screen star, leading man in Dinner at Eight, with Miss Rose Hobart and Mr. Harold Vermillier. Mr. Turle will be heard in the title role of a drama in which a past generation of theatergoers saw the great Richard Mansfield. A few years ago, John Barrymore played the part in silent motion pictures. More recently, Frederick March offered a new version. Miss Hobart was Mr. March's leading lady in the talkie production. The name of the play is
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I, Henry Jekyll, dead these many years and buried deep, return for a brief moment from the grave to relate to you my unhappy story. I was born in the year 809 to a large fortune, inclined by nature to industry, fond of the respect of my fellow men. From early youth, I was moved to the study of medical science, and in due course of time, I became a physician. Every guarantee of an honorable and distinguished future was mine. But in my pride of intellect, I sought forbidden fruit. Alas, I found that which I sought. A drug. A drug so strange, so powerful, it could raise the dominance in my body and in my soul, the beast that lurks in every man. One draft of the drug and I, Dr. Jekyll, healer of men, became cursed Hyde, murderer and devil. Another draft and Jekyll returned. I became myself again. But I shall be more explicit. Come with me to the London lodgings of one Dr. Lanyon, my oldest friend. He is reading a letter. Outside a storm is raging. Oh, Smithers.
Yes, sir. Beastly night, sir.
Beastly indeed. Smithers, I want you to go to your quarters below stairs. Remain there for the next hour and see that the other servants do likewise. Don't return here unless...
Unless, sir...
Unless you hear a revolver shot.
A revolver.
You understand?
You understand?
Yes.
Yes. Good night to you, sir.
But not for long. As the effect of the draft wears off, he sinks again into the terrible creature within. The drug is beyond his control. Again and again he drinks and returns to his better self, only to become once more, against his will, the hideous Hyde. At last, the final drop of the drug is gone. The unspeakable crimes of Hyde have been traced to the home of Jekyll. There is but one way out. We see Jekyll now alone in his laboratory, a draft of poison clutched in his hand. We have ransacked London for the drug in vain, which proves beyond a doubt that the drug was impure at the first. And it was the unknown impurity which lent sufficiency to the draft and was the cause of all my misery. Nothing remains but to end my life with this poison. If I could only have a friend to help me, a dog to lick my hand, to comfort me. But to die all alone. What's that? Can it be my pursuers? Quick, you know, poison. Who's there?
It's I, your Alice.
Oh, joy, is she my affianced bride? And yet I
dare not see her.
Open the door, Henry.
I will upon one condition. That you will promise to leave as soon as I bid you.
I swear.
Very well. Come in, my dear.
Why, how pale you are. And your eyes, so fevered.
True sickness has laid me very low.
Why don't you let me nurse you?
Oh, that's impossible. Besides, it's not a bodily ailment, but the mind. I'll soon recover.
And then we'll be united, never more to part.
Oh, when I'm well, we'll marry and be happy. I dreamed last night that we were married and in heaven. There were green lawns and sparkling waters there and here. We saw the stars quite near, and we were so happy, and your dear face was as white as marble.
How beautiful.
And all at once a voice said, how can you be so happy when you know there are other poor, miserable souls below pleading for mercy? It struck me as a warning, and when I awoke, I pardoned all on earth who had injured me.
And so will I. May all who have injured me find pardon there, as I forgive them.
Oh, God bless you for that prayer, Alice. I feel so happy I could cry for joy. You must leave me now. We'll meet again.
When? Tomorrow?
Perhaps.
Henry.
My darling.
Husband.
Farewell.
No, not farewell. Only goodbye until tomorrow. Until tomorrow, darling.
Until tomorrow. Tomorrow, on which no sun shall ever rise for me. But now my soul is clear. I can die in peace. Oh, God, look into my heart and forgive my sins. You are right. I was wrong to tempt you. I must pray. Pray to keep away the demon. Ah, the fiend is coming. Yes. Hyde is here. Stop that cursed music. It offends my ears. They've come for me. But this poison will treat them.
They're going to take me to the gallows.
But Hyde won't stay on the gallows. I've killed two people already. Here goes for the third. Deacon.
I've always told you I'd kill him. One long squeak, and Deacon dies with Hyde.
Last week, while on tour, we visited Beale Street in Memphis, Tennessee, one of the town's outstanding places, made famous by W.C. Handy's song, which we now play, Beale Street Blues. I've seen the lights of old Broadway, Old Market Street down by the Frisco Bay. I strolled the Prado. I've gambled on the bars in Paris, France. The seven wonders of the world I've seen. And many are the places I have been. Take my advice, folks. And see Beale Street first in Memphis, Tennessee. You'll see pretty browns in beautiful gowns. You'll see tailor maids and hand-me-downs. You'll meet honest men and pickpockets skilled. You'll find that business never closes till somebody gets killed. If Beale Street could talk, if Beale Street could talk, married men would have to take their beds and walk. Except one or two who never drink booze, and the blind man on the corner who sings the Beale Street Blues. I'd rather be here than any place I know. I'd rather be here than any place I know. It's gonna take a sergeant for to make me go.
River Mississippi, and there's a reason why. Because the river's wet and Beale Street's done gone dry. There's a Highland laddie far away from the lassie of his heart. If she loves him still, he cannot say, for they've been so long apart. But a sprig of heather he fondly keeps, that she gave him with a kiss. And when the world all about him sleeps, to the flowers he's murmuring this: comes my Mary through the dairy, through the heather bell. Soon I'll greet her, soon I'll meet her, down where the minister dwells. A ring I'll bring her to fit her finger, maybe she'll throw it aside. Bells of heather, tell me whether Mary's to be my wee bride.
The story of love in Bonnie Scotland, a lover far away from the girl of his heart, Heather Bell.
Hour, under the direction of Rudy Valley, who presents Conway Turrell, Rose Hobart, Harold Vermeulier, Lois Bennett, Cecile Sherman, Louis McHenry Howe, and Lou Hope. Rudy appears now as conductor and chief soloist in a medley of themes from Offenbach's opera, The Tales of Hoffman, arranged by Elliot Jacoby, with new English lyrics by Robert A. Simon. The Tales of Hoffman.
Bring on your beer. Bring on your beer. Drink, 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 drink.
Boys who fashioned the nine songs for Kate Smith's picture gave her some fine material. Moon Song is the really outstanding one, in my humble opinion. Thank you.
that we met was like a melodious dream. Sweet moonstone that wasn't meant for me. Why is it always reminding me of a love dream that never could be? Sweet moonstone that wasn't meant for me. It came gliding into my heart, riding on a moonbeam from above. Sorrow ended and the whole world blended in a rhapsody of love. And I heard her singing to somebody else what I thought was my melody. Sweet moon song that wasn't meant for me. On a moonbeam from above. Sorrow ended and the whole world blended in a rhapsody of love. Then I heard her singing to somebody else what I thought was my melody. Sweet moon song that wasn't meant for me.
It has been our constant aim in planning these programs to bring to you interesting personalities from the theater. But occasionally we have departed from this rule to introduce celebrities in the day's news. Tonight we are honored to present such a newsworthy personage, Louis McHenry Howe, confidential secretary and advisor to President-elect Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Mr. Howe has been a personal friend and confidant of the President-elect for 20 years. It is in no small measure due to his advice, political guidance, and plain hard work that Mr. Roosevelt was nominated and elected. I have asked my friend Walter Trumbull of the North American Newspaper Alliance to interview Mr. Howe for us tonight. Mr. Trumbull met Mr. Howe yesterday. Notes of their conversation were taken and the results edited but not censored. You will hear now. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Louis McHenry Howe.
Mr. Howe, from your long acquaintance with Mr. Roosevelt, what would you name as his principal personal characteristic? That is, if you could name only one.
Courage, Mr. Trumbull. Courage, most certainly. Of course, to those who know him, the exhibition of coolness and courage given at Miami was to be expected. It has always been characteristic of the man that in times of emergency, he acts wisely, quickly, and fearlessly.
Mr. Howe, can you tell me, aside from unemployment, foreign debts, and a balanced budget, what the President-elect considers the most vital problems demanding immediate action?
I think there is another problem, equally important, which has been rather lost sight of. The problem of nationally organized crime.
Just what do you mean by organized crime?
I mean by that the banding together of large associations of criminals under definite leadership in many states for the purpose of criminal acts involving murder, if necessary. We had no nationwide criminal organizations in this country 15 years ago, only city gangs. There was no connection between these organizations and no approach to business ways of doing criminal business. But the individual theft was always at the mercy of the receiver of stolen property. This led to the organization of bands of thieves who could demand a better price for their goods by shopping their ill-gotten gains in wholesale lots. The first really national organization of crime was for the theft and sale of stolen property, and originally it was confined to jewels, silver, and negotiable securities. The success of national organization along these lines emboldened criminals to undertake the wholesale disposition of bulky merchandise. Silks and other fabrics, which were stolen from warehouses and shipped in carload lots all over the country to well-known and supposedly honest merchants to be sold over their counters. This form of organized crime is languishing because bootlegging became so much more profitable and so much easier as a dishonest means of getting rich quickly. The bootlegging industry, however, adopted the method of the thieves for their business operations and carried it to a high point of perfection.
Mr. Howe, do you think crime would be decreased by the repeal of prohibition?
No. Of course, crime will continue. It's absurd to think that these organized criminal bands, deprived of liquor profits, will take to selling lead pencils on street corners. It is already obvious that they are turning from bootlegging to blackmail, kidnapping, counterfeiting. There is 20 times as much counterfeiting as there was 5 years ago.
Mr. Howe, can you tell me just what the president-elect plans to do about the crime problem?
I think I can safely say the president-elect believes that organized crime cannot be met by efforts of this police department or that police department working independently, but only by all of the police departments and the great police systems of the state and of the federal government itself working in close cooperation. It's perhaps not generally understood that the Constitution vests the police powers not in the federal government, but in each state, and no power is more jealously guarded by the states than this one. Now, as we cannot, under the Constitution, remedy crime by passing laws at Washington, the problem must be solved by getting together the different states through their governors and legislatures and the passing of uniform crime legislation. We don't realize how much crime is costing us. It costs more to keep a criminal in jail than to send a boy to college. It has been stated by those who carefully study the subject that the cost to the taxpayer of crimes which can be eliminated by coordinated effort would pay every man's taxes each year and leave a surplus over. This reason, I think it's fair to call the suppression of crime an economic question, the solution of which will go far towards balancing our budget. I think you will hear much from Mr. Roosevelt on the subject.
Mr. Howe, can you tell us anything about Mr. Roosevelt's views on federal control of radio broadcasting?
I'm afraid I can't, except to say there may be some changes in the present system. Nothing, however, that'll prevent you and me and all of us from listening to Mr. Valley's excellent music every Thursday evening.
Thank you very much, Mr. Howe.
Oh, don't mention it, my boy. Good night now. I'll see you at the inaugural ball.
Someday you'll come, dear, and come just to stay. Not like my smoke dreams that soon fade away. But when that happy day
Again, that eminent dialectician, that strictly uptown boy, Mr. Lou Holtz. Are you ready, Mr. Holtz?
Oh. I must tell you, I went up to the Metropolitan Opera House about 3 weeks ago.
There's a girl wants to meet you. There's a girl standing there.
Huh?
A girl wants to meet you. A girl. She's standing.
Who are you? Who are you?
Chwalski.
Chwalski?
Yeah.
Well, I'm Holtz.
All right.
I'm awfully glad to know you. And now look,
yeah.
there's a girl that wants to see me.
Yeah.
Well, how do you know she wants to see me?
Well, she came to the door and she says, I want to meet Mr. Holt.
Were those her words verbatim?
No, she just said she wanted to meet you.
And your name is what?
Chwalski.
Mine is Holt.
Oh, I am.
Well, how does the girl look? How does she look?
Well, she's got a sort of a glint in her eye.
She's got a sort of a glint in her eye, eh?
Yeah.
Well, I don't like gals that look glinty. Are you sure it wasn't a leer?
Well, she was kind of leery when she asked for you.
Isn't it funny? I can't get your last name.
Oh,
mine is Chwalski. Mr. Chwalski, I want you to know that I'm very particular as to the kind of girls I meet. But if it's a tall blonde with blue eyes and a gorgeous figure, I'll meet her.
Well, she's not tall.
Well, if she's a blonde, I'll meet her.
A brunette.
Has she got blue eyes?
Brown.
Has she got a gorgeous figure?
Fair.
Is it a girl?
Yeah.
I'll meet her. As I was saying, Mr. Chwalski, before you so rudely interrupted me, I went down to the Metropolitan Opera House about 3 or 4 weeks ago. I had passes. And they got the most marvelous show. And in the middle of the second act, they have a pantomimical ballet. Big ballet. They have 400 girls on their toes out in the woods, all dressed very young.
Yeah.
See? Then they have the head girl. Her name is Premiere. Premiere. Her last name is Dansuzi.
Yeah.
Her full name is Premiere Dansuzi, you see.
Yeah.
She comes out of the woods, see. She's running.
Yeah.
Never notice
those
girls always running.
Yeah.
Nobody's running after her. Then out comes the head man. His name is Odagio. Sam Odagio. All he's got on is a stale leopard.
Yeah.
You're enjoying this.
Yeah.
A stale leopard and a big crooked stick.
Yeah.
I believe he's a hostess for sheep. He comes out, Chihuahua. He comes out. He's looking for the girl, you see. He's looking. She's standing in the middle of the stage, hiding behind nothing. He comes out. He looks all over for her. He looks in the balcony. He looks in the orchestra. He looks every place but where she is.
Yeah.
Because if he sees her, the show's over. Well, finally, it seemed like months. Finally, he sees her. He wants her. So he runs after, you see. But she don't want it.
Yeah.
He wants.
Yeah.
She don't want it.
Yeah.
He wants, she don't want it. He wants, she don't want it. He started chasing that poor girl 9:15. I left 11:05. I don't know how he made out.
Well, what was the name of that opera?
The name of the opera, The name of the opera. The title, it's well known. Everybody knows it. The title is like a flower.
Like a flower?
Yeah.
Il Salvatore.
Il Salvatore?
Yeah.
Flower?
Yeah.
Well, see you again sometime. Flower.
The Barber of Seville.
Barber of Seville.
Yeah.
Is that a hothouse flower?
Yeah.
Can't you say anything besides
Yeah.
So it's like a flower, Chihuahua. It's a flower.
Carmen.
No. Chwalski. I got it.
What is it?
Samson and Delilah.
There's one thing that puzzles me. I can't figure it out to save my soul. When you take off your shoe and there's a hole in your stocking, what becomes of the goods that was in that hole? Oh, soul of me. Oh, soul of you. Lost telephone. What is the difference between a cynic and a stoic? The teacher asked Jakey Krause. Jakey said, a cynic is where I wash my face, and a stoic brings babies to the house. Oh, soul of me. Oh, soul of you. Lost still affair.
Lay, 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 lay. You may be weary. Women do get weary wearing that same shabby dress. And when she's weary, try a little tenderness. You know she's waiting, just anticipating things she may never possess. While she was out them, try a little tenderness. It's not just sentimental. She has her grief and care, and a word that's soft and gentle makes it easier to bear. Don't regret it. Women, don't forget it. Love is their whole happiness. It's all so easy. Try a little tenderness.
Anglo-American compositions by Harry Woods, Jimmy Campbell, and Reg Kennelly. Try a little tenderness. Where the night that we met was like a melodious dream. Sweet moon song that wasn't meant for me. Why is it always reminding me of that dream that never?